Welcome to the second episode of Library Voices SC. I'm Katie.
And I'm Pamela.
And we have a great show for you today. We've gotten a lot of great feedback about summer reading, and Rosie has heard some great tweets and updates from a lot of you around South Carolina. For instance, there's one mother who sent some good feedback to Anderson about how her daughter has been able to get books using their new library card. She's able to have all the new books that she wants. It's a win-win. And another great tweet came from the Heard St. Andrews Library Branch. There is going to be a month-long book drive in honor of Cynthia Graham Heard. She was a librarian that passed away in the Charleston shooting a year ago this month, and they are accepting gently used and new books all month long at six different locations in Charleston County. And don't forget, if you want any more updates and you want us to advertise anything and all the cool things that you're doing at your library, hashtag SC Libraries Rock and hashtag Libraries SC.
South Carolina Libraries Rock, let us know it. Hashtag SC Libraries Rock. All right.
Thank you. That was weird. All right, Pamela, I'm going to hand it back over to you so that you can go ahead with the interview segment.
All right. Thanks very much, Katie. Thanks for joining us for Library Voices SC. As you know, we are at the Speaker at the Center final book talk, and it's been fantastic. We had a panel discussion today with four amazing writers on the panel, and several joined us in the audience today. So for those of you who are not familiar with Speaker at the Center and you think you might like to come, we're going to tempt you a little bit today. First, we're going to start with Curtis Rogers, who is in charge of it. He's going to tell us a little bit about it, what it's been like, and what to expect in the future. Curtis?
Thanks so much for having me today. My name is Curtis Rogers, and I'm the Communications Director here at the State Library and also the coordinator for the South Carolina Center for the Book, which is an affiliate of the Library of Congress Center for the Book in Washington, D.C. And Speaker at the Center was born about 9 years ago. It was our literary arts coordinator's idea, and she came up with it and said, wouldn't it be a great idea to have a monthly author talk, bring in someone who talks about South Carolina and things that are important about South Carolina. And, you know, our tagline is celebrating South Carolina's rich literary heritage. So we like to do that and have these talks here at the State Library. And we average maybe about five or six books in a series. And it's usually one a month, and so we've just finished our spring and summer 2016 lineup, and we generally have anywhere from 6 to 60 people. You never can tell. We actually did have 60 people at one of these one time and had to pull in extra chairs, so that's always a wonderful problem to have. You know, you always got to have a good problem somewhere. But today was really wonderful because we had Aida Rogers, who is the editor of State of the Heart, South Carolina Writers on the Places They Love, which is volume 2. And we had some of the writers who contributed also join us, and they're here with us today to chat a little bit about what they wrote about. And that was Ron Aiken, Emily Cooper, and Sammy Fretwell. So I'm not going to talk too much longer. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to someone else.
Great. I think we should start with Aida. Tell us a little bit, and everybody out there listening, why these books? This is the second volume of this book, so why these books?
This is a pure accident of curiosity. It was an experiment. I was very curious about how different places had shaped writers. I always felt like going on vacation, either to the mountains or the beach, I always was curious about how I would be different for having grown up with a beach in your backyard or a mountain. That was so alien to me growing up in a small town. I'm from Lexington, so it probably comes from that. Plus, I'm very interested in writers getting a chance to write about what they want to write about. So the idea of offering a professional a topic and a word count, and nothing more, except a deadline, was very attractive to me.
Well, we're glad you did it, and we're really glad you've done it twice.
And a third time coming.
Oh, we can't wait.
We'll I sound like a pregnant woman, don't
I? Well, we'll have to have you back. It's fantastic. We would love to hear from all three of you writers who participated in this a little bit about why you chose the place that you chose. I mean, there's so many places we've all been. How do you pick just one? So why? What is your tie to South Carolina? And if you could write again a different story on a different place, what would it be? So I know I gave some of you a little heads up about the questions, and some of you not so much. If you want to read an excerpt from your story, we would love that. But we really want to let the listening world know about your book and your talents. So
I'll start.
Great. One of the interesting things
is I'm Ron Aiken. So delighted to be in this collection of voices, which is really what it is. And when you ask a writer to start writing, what you're tapping into is their voice. And each one is unique and special, and that's what makes this this collection so powerful, especially when, as Aida said, you give them the opportunity to write about something that is close to their heart. In my case, it took a long time to sort of figure out what I wanted to write about because it's such a big topic. How am I going to hone it down to just one place? Am I going to write about the creek near the house I grew up in that we spent summers in, you know, fishing with bread and making little things and pulling brim out of it and catching crawfish? Or is it going to be some other sort of mystical place, or, you know, it's kind of a big nature sort of scope, or the mountains or the beach? And eventually it just came down to a moment in time for me that changed the course of my life, and a place that was very specific and not very beautiful, which was the concrete stadium of Capital City Stadium, the baseball field here off of Assembly Street. But it was a moment in time that, you know, my life changed toward writing, where it went from me wanting to write poetry and be a great author, all caps, to being a working writer and understanding what that life is really like and how freeing it can be that you're still working in the constraints of maybe not a poetic structure, but a narrative structure and an information structure that can equally be challenging and yet creative at the same time. And it was a fun way to go about doing that. And it was fun writing about a period of my life that it was worth revisiting. You know, you don't always remember how you got started. And so being able to tell that story, it's something that I can let my children read, or somebody else can see that just how interesting and what's what I'm looking for, serendipitous sometimes life can be in those moments, and to really just embrace it and appreciate it.
Did it take you a while to bring back those details, or were they really fresh?
They were fresh because it was such a powerful experience of terror, of, you know, going to show up for a job and thinking you're going to be shadowing somebody and them not showing up. And so, you know, the fear of where are they, the innings are, you know, ticking by and there's a no-hitter going on. And what am I supposed to do? And now the desk wants, you know, more of a front page sports story versus a back, you know, part of the section. And so all this tension and anxiety is ratcheting up, and I've never done an interview. I'm from academia. I don't even know what I'm doing over here. So all that stuff kind of combined for a very powerful moment where, of course, the no-hitter did take place, and I did have to go and do the interviews and write a story and wrap it around. And that the things that led to, that experience, will always remain fresh, but it was good to capture it.
Sure.
As a place in time, especially when the future of that stadium is still rather uncertain.
I've had a lot of good times in that stadium, too.
I think it was dollar beer night by our time. Yeah.
I was really happy to see the story and the place that you chose. I find it interesting that it was the life altering moment that guided you to choose the place.
Now, people probably don't look at that stadium and think, I bet a lot of life altering moments happen there. But for me it did. And I just remembered what the quarter beer night was from the Smokehouse Bar in Grable, Wyoming. That's where I got quarter beer night from earlier.
For me, it was not what I wrote about, an old house that we moved and redid.
Right.
It was not life-altering so much, but it was life capsule sort of, because I had lived in Edgefield and published a paper for 5 years, and that's where I learned, I'm ashamed to say this, but that's where I learned about race and all the racial issues. Mm-hmm. And so living in a majority black community was a wonderful experience. I loved it, and we had a great experience there. But I'd like to read something. That the parties were always wonderful. I enjoyed entertaining in this wonderful 1910 house, but the thing that summarizes it for me, the party, was the night after Obama was elected, and so I'd like to read that.
We would love it, Emily.
The house was always eager for a party. Thus, it seemed appropriate to celebrate President Obama's 2008 election, a black man elected to lead this diverse and yet historically prejudiced nation. Candles glowed. The old house was alive with exultations. More than a dozen people stood in one of the parlors, holding hands and sharing what the night before had meant. A few tears choked our voices. Judy reminded us of being in a crowd the day Nelson Mandela was released from prison in South Africa. That night, we were all releasing a deeply held breath of air. Betty had thought of her first day at a formerly all-black school in Greenville. On the outside, it was one of Governor Byrne's separate but equal schools, similar to white schools she never knew. But on the inside, there were vast differences. Classrooms had exposed tin roof and no cross ventilation. Unsanded wooden desks tore kids' clothes and were topped with different colors of leftover laminate. An impromptu vision had popped into my head election night. Lynched black men who had risen to dance around a bonfire on Edgefield's town square, the place I learned about prejudice and awful injustices. Former state leader Milton Kempson shared his memories. Playing with a white boy where his mother was a domestic and his family the sharecroppers, the little boys would see the school bus go by and talk about what fun they were going to have together when they got on that bus and went to school. Of course, Milt said when they turned 6, the white boy got on the bus and went to school. He walked almost 4 miles to the colored school. Tears give a house depth, memories give it music, love gives it all that matters. Someday, maybe all the new owners will know of the Coopers will be from a glimpse of a couple dancing in the dining room.
Oh, beautiful. That house is filled with depth of stories and love, I can tell. So that is going to entice a lot of our readers, I think, to pick up a copy of the book, State of the Heart. But there's even more. Something completely different that's near and dear to my heart is the nature of South Carolina, the special physical beauty that South Carolina has, that we probably all have a special, beautiful location to see. And Sammy, you talked a little bit about a place earlier. Why your place? What was it? Why did you choose that one?
Well, I wrote about the top of Whitewater Falls as you look back into South Carolina. I think it's one of the most impressive places I've seen anywhere, really. It's interesting because it takes effort to get down to the top of Whitewater Falls. You have to ford a river and, you know, get in waist-deep water, and it takes a bit of effort. And when you get there, you're just rewarded with this spectacular view of Lake Jocassee. It's a man-made lake. It's not natural, but it's still pretty amazing to look at. I picked that primarily. There are plenty of nice places in the mountains. I mentioned earlier the East Otoe Valley in Pickens County is just beautiful, and there's some other spots, jumping off rock in the Jocassee Gorges, which also gives a view of the lake. But the thing that was different here is that you're in one state looking at another, and I'm looking back at my state, and I'm seeing the mountains of my state from another state. And I just thought it was a neat spot to kind of reflect on things and listen to the water and just kind of take it easy. It's just a great spot, and it's a special place to me.
If you were to write another story of another place, what would you choose? I'm going to ask each of you. Second place. What would come in second? What would come in first now that you've written about your first place?
Wow, you know, I would. I really like the mountains a lot, but I like the beach too. Mm-hmm. I never have reconciled in my mind which I like better. So I like them both. But I would probably write something about Pawleys Island, which is a great beach. It's just a wonderful place to just clear your head out and relax and just enjoy life. I wish I had more than a week there every year.
I can understand that. Do you feel like, and I'll ask this of everybody, do you feel like you need to be in the place to write about the place? Does it help? Or can it just be a memory? And if it's powerful enough, is that enough to do to write the story?
I think the memory is what matters. The truth of something is all in our head anyway. Mm. So memories are that's a stock in trade, I think, for writers.
Absolutely. I see nods.
So I think, I agree and I disagree a little bit. I think it depends on what you're writing about. I mean, for me, being an environment writer at the state newspaper, it helps me tremendously to see the things I'm writing about. And things can be described to you, but if you see them, you can describe them better than recounting what someone has told to you. So true. I think it depends on the type of story and what you're writing, but particularly with nature, it's a big help to see it.
Sure.
I think if I had to write a second story, it would probably not be about the creek, but the woods that were next to my house, because we spent just as much time there kind of making our own little, you know, paths, sort of bushwhacking through the foliage there, and then building the tree houses. And, you know, we would basically go steal lumber from the houses that were going up in our neighborhood and just walk off with it and build our nice, beautiful tree houses. And we'd get carpet and put carpet in there. And there may or may not have been some centerfolds found and put up there. And we had a trap door, you know, so you had the secret knock to get in. And those kind of things. And we'd also camp out there. And because my house was closest to the woods where we camped out, my kitchen would be the one that would be raided the most, and we'd blacken up all of our pots and pans and, you know, eat all our eggs. And then sometimes if it got a little too hot or whatever, we'd come inside and sleep in the house. But, probably there, because I bet a lot of people have had similar experiences growing up at a time. And as Aida mentioned during our talk, things are different now than they were even then. Kids don't play outside as much. They are much more connected to technology than we ever were. You know, we came home, threw our books in the house, and then we're right back out the door. And I don't think that's the case anymore. And so it'd be nice to be able to revisit that sometime.
I hope you do. I'd like to read that story too. Emily, would you choose another place?
I'd write about another, a character other than the house, but maybe. Write about Harry Cram, who lived on Devil's Elbow Island. It originally had another name, but he named it Devil's Elbow. He always had a pistol by his side. He Doberman's on the island. Two Marines swam over and held his son at knife point outside his bedroom door. And he was a crack shot. I won't go any farther.
I really want to read that story. That's great. Well, it looks like y'all could put together yet another compilation, just the three of you together. Aida, you've got some great authors and writers
in
this book.
I agree. And what I just realized just today is I think the first book had maybe 35 writers in it, the second book, 35, 36, the third book, 35, 36. So that's past 100. And there are so many more writers out there. South Carolina is just loaded with closet writers, writers who are very well published. It's been very eye-opening to realize that there are that many good, qualified writers of so many different kinds of stories in one small, poor state. So, you know, we're famous for being poor, but we're rich in writers. So I think that's...
We're rich in a lot.
Yes, that's
really
right.
Are.
We are.
I really appreciate all of you taking the time after the great panel discussion that you had to stay a little bit longer and share your voice on Library Voices SC for the South Carolina State Library. We look forward to reading your book, and I look forward to telling more and more people about it. Safe journeys back to Asheville, back to home. I look forward to future stories.
Thank you.
That was absolutely fantastic, and what a great way to end episode number 2.
And don't forget our hashtags, #SCLibrariesRock and #LibrariesSC.
We're looking forward to our next episode, and in the meantime, if any of you have some good ideas that you'd like to see us talk about or cover, or you want to come be on the show, we'd love to have you.
Definitely.
Just reach out to us. You can
call us.
You can email us.
Or you can tweet us.
Ooh, I love it. Let's do it. And as always, I'm Pamela.
I'm Katie.
And we're keeping it short
and sweet.